time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.
And it's time for Abandoned Manitoba, and it's a special Abandoned Manitoba today because there's so much to talk about. We are going to break it into two parts, but before all that, let me welcome Gordon. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Now, remind us of the clue.
Well, I said we would explore an abandoned site on the shore of Lake Winnipegosis, the story for which was a little fishy. Well, actually, it isn't a little fishy. It's a lot fishy because we're going to talk about a place called the Good Harbor Fish Station. This is a site from which, for a period of over 34 years, commercial fishers went out to catch fish from the lake.
And so fishy that we need to split this up into two parts, right?
Oh, it's a big story. There's lots of material here.
Okay, so what exactly is commercial fishing?
Commercial fishing is the catching of fish for sale rather than just to feed yourself. And of course, for thousands of years, Indigenous people here in Manitoba have caught wild fish as a food source. This sort of subsistence fishery is not what we're going to be discussing here today. And likewise, we're not talking about the act of growing fish in captivity, in what we call aquaculture. And we're not talking about recreational fishing, where you're just doing it for your personal enjoyment. We're talking about commercial fishing, where you sell the fish.
And when did that start in Manitoba?
Probably goes back a very long time, I think. Whenever anybody caught more fish than they needed to feed themselves, you know, they may have bartered the excess, you know, to someone else for something they needed. So, you know, I think the practice of trading fish goes back a very long way. The practice of buying fish for money probably dates back to the time of the fur trade. You know, the Hudson's Bay Company, for example, would buy fish from local fishers to serve their needs, you know, to feed the fur traders. And of course, when European settlement in Manitoba began over, 200 years ago, the demand for fish just skyrocketed. And as a result, the commercial fishery flourished. So it's been going on at least 200 years and probably much, much longer. You know, and it occurred on, of course, many of the lakes. We have an abundance of lakes here in Manitoba, so of course, a lot of places to fish. But I'm going to confine our discussion to the fisheries on the three large lakes, you know, Lake Winnipeg, Lake Winnipegosis, Lake Manitoba. You know, and so on these large lakes, fishing was done typically using nets. In other words, you didn't use a rod and reel because that just wasn't very efficient to catch the kind of numbers that commercial fishers need to catch. And so they would use nets. They would deploy them typically from a boat. And so in the early days, of course, long before technology began to be used, they would use sailboats. And they would sail offshore. And of course, these lakes are typically shallow, and that's why you would need to use a boat. Because yes, you could, in theory, deploy a net from shore, but you'd have to walk quite a ways out to get into deep water in a lot of the cases. So a sailboat was a better option. But then, of course, if you went too far out, if, for example, the wind died and you couldn't come back, or, you know, sometimes these lakes get pretty nasty. If the wind gets up, it could be actually dangerous. So it did tend to limit how far offshore they would go. And so typically in the sail period of the commercial fishery, they didn't go very far offshore. Once they began replacing the sailboats, however, with motors that were driven by fuel, well, then they went way out. And they would spend, in fact, long periods of time going out way far out into the lake, far and wide. And so they would set out a net. They would leave it there, typically overnight, and then the next day come back, pull it up, see what fish they had caught, and remove the fish in the net, put the net back in, ready to catch more fish. So that's basically the idea of a commercial fishing.
So could commercial fishing only happen during the summer months?
No, actually it happened year round. And there's one notable exception that I'll end up talking about next week. But I got the idea for today's episode from my friend Shelley Matkowski. Her father was a commercial fisherman on Lake Winnipegosis. And she told me that he fished throughout the year. He would spend the spring and the fall in northern Manitoba on a smaller lake. And then he would spend the winter and the summer on Lake Winnipegosis. And of course, it's easier to deploy a net in the summer when there's open water. You just drop it in the water. They got very ingenious at putting nets under the ice in the wintertime. So I've seen it done, and I have to say I'm not the best person to describe the process, but basically you cut two holes in the ice a distance apart, and then you have this rig, and that's the best word I can think of for it, a rig that you would attach your net to, and you'd push it into the first hole, and it goes underneath the ice towards the second hole, and it comes out the second hole, and in the process you end up stretching the net out between these two holes. It's really, say, quite ingenious the way they do it. And so the basic idea is the same as in the summertime. You put in the net, you leave it there, you come back, you pick out your fish. And, of course, to get out to the net sites in the wintertime, of course, you couldn't use a boat. So instead, you'd use either a horse-drawn sleigh, or sometimes they'd use a dog team, in the early days anyway. And then later, of course, they used various motorized vehicles, things like bombardiers, and then more recently, they've used snowmobiles.
So you said they leave the nets out for a day or so. What do they do while they're waiting? Chill out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, sometimes,
literally in the winter.
Sometimes there's other tasks to work on, yeah. But a lot of times they would simply come back home. You know, you just come back and relax, or you'd have work to do on shore. But of course, the further out you go, the further distance you have to travel to come back, and especially in the old days before they had motorized, you know, vehicles, it was simply not practical to return every night. So, for example, on Lake Manitoba, I'm quite familiar with the situation there, and I'm sure it's the same on other lakes too. They would basically go out and live on the ice for weeks or months at a time. And what they would do is they take a little building, kind of a little ice shack, barely bigger than an ice fishing shack we might use today. And basically it was a little home on sleighs. And the idea was that they would have their bed, they would have the table, they would have a little wood stove in there, and they would live in there for, say, periods of time while they're waiting for the fish to be caught. And, of course, this would entail long periods of time away from their families. So occasionally they'd get together, they would chat, they would smoke, they would, well, I'm told they drank, and they'd play cards and other sort of social activities.
What happened to the fish that they caught?
They would bring it back to shore in wooden tubs. At least initially they were wooden. Now, today, they're made of other materials, plastic. And these tubs were called 50-pounders because they weighed 50 pounds. In fact, by the time you put ice and stuff in them, they would sometimes weigh up to 100 pounds with the ice, the fish, the tub material itself. And they would be brought back to a fishing station to be dressed. Now, what we mean by that is to dressing fish is that you remove the internal organs, or what the fishers call guts. You remove the guts. Sometimes you cut off the tail, the fins, sometimes the head, although usually you leave the head on. But they don't fillet the fish. You know, filleting, of course, is when you cut it into small sort of cookable pieces. They usually didn't do that. Sometimes they did, but more often they did not. And then they would take these dressed fish and pack them on ice, of course, to keep them from spoiling. And if that wasn't possible, they would just freeze them. Of course, in the wintertime, it was pretty easy. Just leave them outside. They would freeze solid. And then they would be shipped to market. And depending on where they were, they would be shipped by boat, by wagon, by truck or train, and off to market. And, of course, then they would be consumed.
So now that we have, like, a context, tell us about the good harbor that you mentioned right at the beginning.
Right. Okay. So communities of fishers established all around these lakes, especially at spots that had good natural harbors they could use for their boats. And, of course, the other key was they had to have access to transportation to get their fish to market. And this, of course, did limit where they could do it. So, for example, on Lake Winnipegosis, it's fairly remote, and there weren't a lot of natural places for transportation access. So the town of Winnipegosis was the major center for most of the fishermen, but not the only one. So in fact, there were at least 22 fish stations around Lake Winnipegosis, and Good Harbor was one of those 22 stations around Lake Winnipegosis. So to orient you, it was on the west shore of the lake, about 35 miles as the crow flies northwest of Winnipegosis, the town, about 10 miles north of Camperville. The nearest town is Duck Bay. It's about 3 miles to the north of Good Harbor. And this little fish station was established in 1962 through the amalgamation of two independent fish groups. About 17 fishers altogether were involved. They were from South Spruce Island in Camperville. And they got together to build a state-of-the-art fish processing plant to be operated by a company called the Winnipegosis Cooperative Fisheries Limited.
What did Good Harbor look like?
Well, it had a natural west-facing harbor that was very good because it was protected from the wind. And they enhanced that harbor by dredging a channel. They had wooden docks around the edges of this channel where the fishing boats could come in and moor. And then they had an electric conveyor where they could take these 50-pounders with the fish, lift them up onto the conveyor. They would go up into the building. They had a large, it was a 5,000-square-foot metal building where they would do the dressing. It had a full concrete floor. They had a little building beside the fish processing plant where they called the ice house. That's where they would either make ice or they would store ice from the wintertime, for example. And then they had a big hopper on the outside of the building for the storage, short-term storage anyway, of the fish guts. Nearby, there were some reels, because keep in mind, these nets come out of the water, they're wet. And in the early days, the nets were made out of cotton, which meant they were very prone to rot. So they'd have to dry them quickly to prevent them from spoiling. They had a whole bunch of little bunkhouses where some of the hired workers would live. They had larger bungalows where the fishers and their families, because this wasn't just, say, a bunch of fishers. It was a whole family as well. It was wives and children. There was also a couple of large tanks for storing fuel for the boats, for the trucks. They had a grocery store. You know, you could buy groceries there. They had a small building for the conservation officers from the provincial government that were overseeing all this. And then quite a ways away from the facility, they had a big pile for the long-term disposal of the fish guts.
So where does the abandonment part come into this story?
Well, the station closed in 1996, about, say, 34 years after it opened. And today there's only just a few vestiges of it remaining. And so I thought that this week we talked about the rise of the fish station. Next week we'll talk about the fall.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Gordon.
You're welcome.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.